Explore the darkness.
Find out what goes bump in the night. Did you hear that?
Did you see that? What's that bright light in the sky? Oh, we so need to investigate.
Calling all witches and sensitives.
Explore the paranormal.
With host
Shauna
and Vicky
from Geeks Paranormal.
Wednesdays
at 9 Eastern,
8 Central.
Let's explore. This week on Exploring the Paranormal with Geeks Paranormal,
join Shauna and Vicky as they speak with
Anita Taubel
about her abilities and her experiences in the paranormal.
yeah, it's going through our headphones. Okay.
Well, no, just...
Oh, it's time for us to get on.
We got to get on right now.
All right, tell her, we're going to put you on mute real quick, and then we'll be right back, okay? Explore the darkness.
Find out what goes bump in the night. Did you hear that?
Did you see that? What's that bright light in the sky? Oh, we so need to investigate.
Calling all witches and sensitives.
Explore the paranormal.
With hosts
Shauna
and Vicky
from Geeks Paranormal.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
All right, you ready to say it? Go. You're on.
Oh, hello, everybody. This is Vicky with Exploring the Paranormal with Geeks Paranormal. How is everybody tonight?
And this is Shauna. I hope everybody is doing good. Sorry, we're having some, like, it's unusual, technical difficulties. Just bear with us, like always. I don't know what's going on. Our connection tonight seems to be just going haywire, and I'm wondering if it's because of all the electrical we got going on in this room tonight.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Well, the Wi-Fi does not need to be near the... Put it down there. There's the static. Oh my goodness.
I'm excited tonight about our guest.
I am too. We have tonight Anita Taubel. And hang on just a second, I'm going to bring her on. Anita, are you there?
I'm here.
Yay!
Well,
welcome to our show. Thank you so much for being a part of it.
Hey, I'm excited to be here with you guys.
Despite the technical difficulties.
It's been a long time coming,
well,
Anita.
You know, the difficulties you have is because of all the energy I have within me. It's just coming through the line on you guys.
I believe it.
I totally believe it. Well, in case everybody doesn't know, Anita Taubel has been featured in several of Booth Brothers' documentaries. Do you want to talk about those real quick?
I was in The Soul Catcher, which is a documentary about Indian boarding schools. And after the boarding schools had closed down, what was left behind, which is spirit activity. I did The Possessed, which I'm going to get into later on in the show. It hits home. It involves me and my son. The Haunted Boy, Children of the Grave 1 and 2, and then The Unseen. And then I was also featured in Land of Misery, which was... The Animal Planet, The Haunted.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's awesome. And how did you, what did they do? I mean, how did you use your gifts in those shows?
Well, I've known Keith Age forever. I played music with him for a little bit. I mean, I've known him for about 23, 24 years. And he got into the paranormal, and I had always been gifted. And, something happened to me and my son. Like I said, I'll get into it later on in the show, but we had live footage of it, and so he contacted me and asked me if I would like to do that, you know, put it into a show, and I didn't want to at first, and then I talked to my son, so that's basically how we got to introduce with Christopher Booth and Philip Booth. But Land of Misery, I was a private investigator, And I was called by another private investigator who owned this house, who knew I had a team, and she was in Texas, and she was having some issues, and asked me if I would drive all the way down to the lower part of Texas and investigate her home, and I did, and it was a pretty freaky situation. We got a lot of footage that after we had did that, the Animal Planet had contacted me and said, hey, we want to film your team. You know, we know you got a lot of this raw footage, and the historian I had that was on my team, she did an excellent job getting a lot of credentials from the property that dated back to the early 1800s that was pretty much black and white of everything I said. It was pinpoint right on the spot. So the Animal Planet was pretty interested in it, and that's how we did that with them. It's just like everything just kept coming, and Christopher and Philip kept wanting to do movies with us, and it was intriguing. It was fun.
Oh, sounds wow. like it. What a blast.
No kidding.
Plus, wow, what an adventure. So, how did you first realize that you had a gift? I mean, what happened to kind of go along with your first gift experience?
I was raised up. We're Indian, but we were from a very Christian background. And I was always brought up, my grandmother was gifted. And I was told I can never use my gift. I can never speak of it because people would think that I was crazy or look down on the family. So I was sort of a loner, you know, because as a kid, you know, you really, if I didn't have my grandmother to talk to, I'd probably went crazy. But I didn't know how to interact with other kids. Because I thought I was weird. I thought I was different. I actually thought I was crazy. And then as I got into my teenage years, I started going into houses by myself and just hanging out in graveyards. And then I had my best friend, Judy. She started doing stuff with me. And I got to doing things like that, and I got to helping people. I was like 15 whenever I did my first cleansing on a house that had demonic activity in it. And then I became a private investigator, and I started using my gift to solve murder cases and missing exploited children. That was my big thing that I thought, you know, hey, I have a gift, I know things, I can feel it, why not help and use it for good? You know, a lot of people don't do that. They're so afraid of it, you know. And as I got older I had to get in touch with myself. You know, you can tell somebody 100 times, you know, hey, I know this, but I don't know how I know that. And they're just going to look at you like you're crazy. You know, you can't explain how you know. You just know as a kid. But as I got older, I started keeping a journal. And every time I'd have a premonition or if something come to me, I would write that down. I would date it. And I think I actually talked to you, Vicki, about doing that.
Yes, actually, we have talked about that.
Yeah, it's very helpful because you can go back on that and you can look and, you know, you can see the date and the time that you had that, even a dream. Dreams are sometimes very vivid, and I always tell people, if you have a dream and it's like you live it, write it down. Put the date, everything, write it down. And that way you can go back and you can look at it. And, you know, you can sort of like compare notes. Like, for instance, I was 6 years old and my dad, I was homesick. And my mother was in a wheelchair. And I can barely remember this, but I heard a man's voice and he said, your dad hit a train, but he's okay. And I jumped up out of bed and I went into the living room and I told my mom, I said, dad hit a train, but he's okay. And she told the lady that was sitting with her, you know, put me back in bed. I was probably still running a fever. And I said, no. And she goes, well, how did you know this? And I said, because that man's voice told me. Well, I went back and I laid down, and it was probably about 15 minutes, and the phone rang, and the lady's name was Pat. She answered it, and she told my mom, she said, it's your husband. And he said, he hit a freight train, but he's okay. And that was like the first thing that happened that my family knew I was a little bit different.
Well, that had to be kind of scary, though, for a 6-year-old. I can't imagine,
it,
you know.
Well, the scariest thing I think that really happened to me, I can remember like it was yesterday. I was 8 years old. And like I said, my mom, she died whenever I was 12, but she had been sick since I was like 5 years old. She was in and out of hospitals, and she became a paraplegic. And they didn't know, all they knew that it was a virus that attacked her nerve system. But I was in the bedroom with her, and she was laying in the hospital bed, and she was real sick. And she had spent like 2 weeks in the hospital, and she just got home. And I seen this black shadow come down through the wall, and it was like a creepy crawler type of thing.
Oh my gosh.
You know, as a kid, you just stand there and look at it. It came down the wall, and it came on the bed, and it like dissolved into my mother. And she, whenever that happened, she started screaming, and I went out and got my brother, and I told him, I said, something went into Mom, and, you know, they're all freaking out. Well, we took her to the hospital, and to make a long story short, I never seen my mother after that until she died.
Oh, and boy, I'm so sorry.
They did exploratory surgery, and she was ate up with cancer.
Oh, wow.
And I never will forget this thing. It was just like, it didn't have a face, but it was a form, but then it wasn't a form. It was like, I don't know how to explain it. It was like a glob, but it had where it looked like hands coming out whenever it would crawl in it. That's probably the most creepiest and bad thing that I can even think of that ever happened, but, you know, that I can remember.
Honestly, if cancer was an entity, I think you just described it perfectly. Yep. What it would look like, a dark blob of, you know, goo with legs.
Well, my mother was very religious, and she always prayed. And my grandmother that I got my gift from, she would always, as a child, I remember waking up, and she would be standing over me and my sister praying. And, you know, she'd always say, I have to protect you. Well, whenever my grandmother was in a nursing home, they called my father, and they said, you need to come over here. We need to speak to you. So I went with him because I was a daddy's girl, and I heard him tell my dad that, you know, my grandmother was talking to a man in the room, and they thought that once somebody had came in and didn't sign the book, because whenever you went in, you had to sign that you were who you were there to visit and what time you arrived. And they said they went into the room, and there was nobody in there, and they asked her, they said, Effie, who was she talking to? And she said, God. And just went on about her business like it was nothing. And, you know, growing up, I always had a sense of pride that, you know, I knew I was different than kids. And like I said, I really didn't hang out with anybody. I was a loner. And I know there's a lot of people, whenever I do seminars and conferences, I talk to them, and they're, you know, they don't know how to go about moving forward with what they have. They're afraid of it. And a lot of times, you know, I'll do a one-on-one with people because I was there, and I know what it's like. You know, whenever you don't have anybody you can talk to about it, it sort of becomes a situation that you put yourself in a box and you feel like you're by yourself.
Right, exactly. I mean, as you know, because we've talked privately quite a bit, that I struggle with my own gifts. So how would you recommend, like, somebody like me to strengthen their gifts or to be able to block off some things, because I feel everything?
Well, see, that's one thing, and, you know, I'm Indian, so I go a spiritual way that a lot of people don't, okay? I call BS on a lot of people that say that they're gifted. I don't like the word psychic, because it's a gift that you're given, you know, and we're not to abuse or use it, and, you know, right. Use it for good, not for bad. And it makes me mad whenever you come to someone who's struggling with that, and I see nowadays, everybody's psychic. I mean, you can get on Facebook, internet, everybody's psychic. Everybody knows this. And, you know, there's a lot of people who can read people, but in a sense, they don't have a gift at all. You can read people by facial expressions and everything. But what I tried to tell people who's struggling with that gift, you know, you need to test yourself. And I always second guess myself. Whenever I worked on the murder cases, you know, that's something big. And so I would always, like, I would get this feeling and I would see it. Sometimes it would come to me like a movie. You could just sit there and watch everything that happens. Sometimes it's like a puzzle and you've got all these like little pictures and you've got to put that puzzle together. Or a lot of times, the last one I worked on, I felt everything that the boy went through, everything. Oh. And I'd never had done that before, and it drained me, and it bothered me for months and months and months trying to recuperate from it. But, you know, with people like you that's just trying to get in tune with it and get yourself balanced, you have to find your own level of where you're at, if that makes sense to you. You can't just... To me, it's like a learning tool. You know, you go through one stage, and you get that down, and then you go to the second stage where you feel comfortable. Work at your pace of what you feel comfortable. Never second guess yourself. I do it a lot, but everybody's got a sense of a sixth sense, that little gut feeling you feel, and you're always like, I know I shouldn't do that, but should I do that? Or you know you're not supposed to be somewhere because that gut is, you know, it's all in knots and you know it's telling you something. Okay, that's one of your senses. That's one of your senses telling you, hey, I'm not supposed to be there. Hey, I'm not supposed to do that.
Oh, yeah. I have a bad habit of not listening.
Yeah, I get a lot of red flags, and then I just kind of, oh, well, I'm just going to do my own thing anyway.
That's the problem. People, you know, and I did it for a long time. You need to open up and listen, you know, because I would hear, like, spirits talking to me, and I would blow it off like, I didn't hear that. And then I started listening, and a lot of times, like, especially on some of the investigations that we did to help people in their homes, there were actually family spirits that had been there trying to help their family. And they were telling me things, and I wasn't listening. And then I'd have to go back and sit quietly and listen to them. And whenever I came out, and I'd ask the people, you know, do you know so-and-so? And I'd give them a name. They're like, yeah, that was my dad, or that's my uncle, or that's my mom. Well, here's what she wants you to do, blah, blah, blah. And it all made sense to them. But to me, whenever I first started, I was scared, you know, because I didn't have enough confidence, I guess that's what I want to say. You know, and that's why whenever you meet someone who just tells you everything you want to hear, I call BS on that.
That's Vicky all the time. She tells me what I want to hear every time I turn. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
She is so lying. Oh, my gosh.
No, but she's freaky.
I'm freaky.
With Vicky, you know, whenever I first met her, I mean, her energy was, I was drawn to her. You know, it was like a click. And I went through some bad stuff the past week, and she's actually picked up on it.
Yeah, you know, she was telling me about that.
It's weird. Once your energies get connected, I think that's like a bond. And, you know, people know. I have a very good friend that lives in, she's a Cuban witch, and she lives in California. And I use her, you know, it's always good to have friends, especially if you're trying to help people. There's things that I don't know, and I will call her. And I'm like, hey, can you help me with this, this, and this? And she always helps me. You know, she always helps me. And it's funny because her and I are really connected, too. You know, I'll be having something bad happen to me and my family, and she'll send me a text, say, hey, I know something's going on with you guys. You know, I lit a candle for you and blah, blah, blah. And it's funny that whenever you do connect with your energy with someone else, it's funny how they can pull that off of you.
Oh, it's like Vicky. Every once in a while, she'll message me and she goes, are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine. And she goes, it's got to be somebody in our group then. Somebody is having a problem. And she'll go into our group and be like, okay, who's having a bad day? Y'all need to cut it out.
Well, you know, everybody's like, well, can you shut this off? No, you can never shut it off. You can learn how to tone it down. Because if you run full force, at 100 miles an hour, this thing will drive you crazy. You know, whenever I was younger and I was trying to grow up, you know, I would see spirits, or I would be in class and something would pass by, or you know, or just something out of the norm. But it was out of the norm for other people, but it was normal for me. But, you know, you have to sort of tone that down, because if not, you'll be talking to thin air and people's looking at you like, man, this chick, she's lost it. You know? That's happened to me several times. And, like, I'm like a beacon for children's spirits. I don't know why. I guess I'm a mother hen, because I have kids and grandkids, and I mother everybody, because I never had that mother figure in my life. So I guess I took that as I grew, and I sort of like try to mother everybody. Even my husband's like, you know, you're trying to mother me, stop, or I don't need you as a mom. But that's just my me. But it's funny, because I'll be someplace in, like, Concho, the Indian boarding school. There's in Soul Catcher, the movie, there's a little spirit. His name is Michael, and I encountered him so many times, and like I would just stop and talk to him, and people would be looking at me like, man, she's crazy or something. But then one day I had my son and my stepdaughter with me, and he actually ran, and when he ran through the trees, and he was parting the leaves back, and they could see it. And it scared my stepdaughter so bad, she just started bawling hysterically, you know, and it sort of amused my son, because, you know, and it amused me, because it's like, wow, now you can see what I'm seeing.
Right.
That's cool.
Yeah. Now, refresh my memory. Michael was the one that drowned, wasn't he?
Yes, he drowned. You know, in Indian boarding schools, a lot of times, whenever the kids were taken there, the parents never came back. And so over, like, breaks and stuff, the kids that the parents never came back, they were just there all the time. But it was over Christmas break, and he was told not to go out on the ice, that it wasn't thick enough, and he did to play ice hockey, and he fell through. Well, the other kids tried to get him out, and they couldn't. So by the time they went and ran to get help, he had already lost his life. But they have, in the gym in Soul Catcher, we put a basketball up and we put some candy, which children's spirits always like candy. So we put candy out there, and he's messing with the ball and got all everything going off. Keith Age was there, Philip Booth, and Adrian was there, Adrian Scaff, Christopher Booth. There's like 20 people in there. And they were amused because, you know, everything was going off and the ball was moving and there's no one around it. Well, then the door to the gym, it started like being pulled open. And so Keith grabbed a hold of it. There's like a rope there, and he's playing tug of war with something. So Adrian Scaff goes around to the opposite side, and he's like, there's nothing here, just a dead rope. You know, the rope's hanging down. And Keith's like, it can't be, because I'm pulling tug of war with it. And he's like, there's nothing here. Mm. I mean, it's amazing how things like that, you know, can happen. And I just love it whenever you get everything on film and you can show it to somebody. Say, look, see what I got?
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
That is,
love that. See,
every time
I'm not
I see
crazy.
That in our review, it's like, wow, we really caught something. That's great.
I know.
Now, ask me if I have it up online for people to see it. No, but...
She will by the time her grandchildren are grown.
It's just me!
You know, I wanted to do this, and I always like to talk about the dangers in paranormal. You know, everybody thinks, whenever I started this, it's been, I'm going to tell my age, but it's been like 30 years ago, 30-some years ago.
Girl, you look like you in your
30s. Well, thank you. I love you. You know, but you get out there like me, you know, going out into graveyards by myself. Was that very smart of me? No, probably not. But, you know, kids nowadays, it's so cool to see something, a show on TV, and they want to go out and they want to experience it. So they get out there and they don't know the dangers of what can be in these buildings and cemeteries. And the reason why my son and I did the Possessed, and we put a footage on there, that it was a cemetery, and I had gotten a call from a farmer that owned land that was right up to the cemetery. And he said, every time I, you know, go out there and I till my ground or something, I hear screams coming from there, and I see black shadows. And I own half of the cemetery. Can you come and tell me what's there? Because if I, you know, I'm not going nuts, is what he basically told me. So I took my team down there, and at the time, I had all police officers and bounty hunters, and Paoli, chief of police from Oklahoma, was on my team. So we were all professional people. And we went down there, and we caught, the first night we was there, we caught a great picture. I mean, it's, you know, something that you wait a lifetime to get, but it's of an older black man, and he's leaned up against the tree, and you can see he's got a white beard, he has bib overalls on and everything. Well, I sent it to Taps, and I said, can you please tell me what I have here? Well, Jason sent me a big long email back and told me I have, you know, 100% proof of picture of a ghost. He said, this is legit, and it's the best thing I've ever seen so far in my career. So, you know, I got in touch with the farmer, and I told him, and I said, we're going to come back one more time and see what we can pick up. Because that night, we got all kinds of EVPs of the screams and whatnot. Well, as we were doing our history on the land, we found out that it was an all-black cemetery, and in 1972, there was two black boys, one was 16 and one was 17, that KKK had hung them on a tree next to a church there and burnt the church down. Well, one of the boys' grandmothers was a voodoo priest, and she cursed the land, saying that if you were not of African-American descent, and if you were to step foot on this property, that you would be cursed, something bad would happen to you. Okay, so I found that out, and that was, it was in, you know, I found out about the KKK and everything from archives of papers. Well, then, whenever I started asking questions around the little area, the community, that's when I found out about the lady that was the priest. Well, my son was 18 years old, he was on my team, and he had had an argument with his girlfriend. And normally, if you're upset or something's going on in your life that you're not really all together 100% there, I won't let you go because that opens you up for attacks.
Exactly. Thank
you. So I decided to let my son go. He said he was okay. And so I said, okay, I'm going to let you go. Well, we get in there, and we're all splitting up. And he was probably about 12 feet away from me because I didn't want him to get too far, because he was down and out. But he had sit down on the ground, and he went into Indian pose with his chin in his hands, sitting there. And like I said, I was about 12 feet from him, and everybody else was in four corners, and we were doing our little EVP session and just seeing what we could come up with. Well, I heard a growl, and I looked over, and I said, Marcus. And he didn't answer me. So I thought, well, he's just still upset about her. So about 30 minutes went by, and things started feeling really weird in the cemetery. Over in his vicinity, there was like green lights going up and down, like little spirit balls, I call them. And I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to that because that was the norm. But one of the guys on my team come walking through there, and I seen him touch Marcus, and he yelled at me, Anita, get over here. Well, whenever I ran over there, I thought Marcus was into a convulsion or having a seizure. His eyes had rolled back in his head. He was had froth on his mouth. But whenever I touched him, I knew something was wrong with him.
Oh my goodness.
Whenever I touched him, he opened his eyes up. His eyes were as fiery red as fire. And he looked at me. He lunged at me. He grabbed me by the throat. He was choking me so hard that I was starting to pass out. And I hollered, you know, to the guy that was standing there, you know, not hollered, but told him, help. And so he hollered at everybody, and they come running over there, and they're trying to pull him off of me. For about 45 minutes, I fought this thing inside of him. It took six guys, to big guys, to hold him His face was getting distorted. He was talking Latin.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know anything but his native tongue in English. And he started speaking Latin. His face was getting distorted where it looked like an old man type of a face. And I was praying over him and praying over him. I was cussing his thing because that was my son. And I wanted it out of him. And I kept telling it to come into me because I knew I could fight it. And I finally took my medicine bag off, and I said, I plead the blood of Jesus on you, and I held it to the top of his head, and he went out. And we carried him to the van, and it was like 10 minutes before he came out of it. He didn't remember anything that happened, nothing. Wow. So we leave, and I go home, and one of the guys that's on my, JC that's on my team, he's like, he calls me, he goes, "How's Marcus?" And I'm like, "He doesn't remember anything." He goes, "Well, I got something to tell you." And I'm like, "What?" He goes, "We got the whole thing on film."
Whoa.
I'm like, "Yeah." I'm like, "What?" He goes, "We have the whole thing on film. Everything. Marcus's face distorting, everything. We got it on film."
Wow.
Well, he brought the disc up to me, and, you know, I let it sit. But I had talked to Keith, my friend, Keith Age, and I told him about it. And he's, you know, it was like 5 years later, he calls me. He goes, "Hey, you still got that CD of you and Marcus in that graveyard?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, my friends, the Booth brothers," he said, "they're producers, and they want to know if they can use it in film The Possessed." I'm like, "No, you know, that's too close to home.
Right,
it's
right.
Personal. I don't want to use it." So I let it go, and then Keith, about 6 months later, called me back. And I said, "Well, let me talk to Marcus." And I told Marcus, I'm like, "You know, we can't do this because the people sees us. They're going to make fun of us. They're going to, you know, you're young. They're going to totally say you're crazy." Mm-hmm. And he's like, "But Mom, you know, that happened. We got proof that it happened. Why not put it out there where kids can see that playing with Ouija boards and not knowing what you're doing and being in graveyards like that, you can have things happen to you."
Yes. Yes.
Exactly.
So he and I... Exactly, and we sit and we talked about it. So I called Keith back and I said, "You know, me and Marcus talked about it, and if they want to use it in the film, tell them go ahead. You know, I'll give them the rights to it and they can use it because we want them to let kids see what happens."
Yes.
I said, "The only thing I don't want the part of Marcus's face being all distorted on the film." And he's like, "Okay, we can do that." So they used that. I mean, it's real live, real time. It's probably about 15 minutes of what happened to Marcus in the movie The Possessed, and that was why. And that started me and him on a crusade that, you know, kids need to be educated.
Yes, they do.
They need to be taught, because I've seen so many kids. This is not a joke.
No.
I take what I do very seriously. Everybody's like, "Well, you know, I'm a Christian." It doesn't matter. You can't believe in one realm and not believe in the other.
Exactly. Because
it's a warfare. And it makes me so mad whenever people are closed-minded to it and they can't see past that blind Christianity to understand that it is a warfare out there, you know. Good versus evil. You know, it's black and white. And that's something that I try to... in my conferences, tell people. I try to educate people on. I mean, I have myself been involved in 3 exorcisms.
Oh.
And the first one...
Can you tell us about that after our break, Anita?
Yeah, we got it.
I'm so sorry.
We actually got a break that we need to go on, and we're going to put you on a quick mute. But this is so fast.
Yes, it is. We didn't even
realize
what time it was.
Right?
I was like, "Oh gosh."
So we'll be right back with you.
Yeah, bear with us. We're going to put you on mute real quick, and then we'll be right back after the break. Okay.
I'm Jenna Valadez with The Basement Files. Tune in Friday nights, 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
What happens to a ghost when their home is torn down? No one thinks of the disembodied when they rip down old buildings, dig up cemeteries, and build clean, unhauntable condos. Every year, hundreds of spirits are driven out of their old haunts by the careless living to exist alone with no one to scare. At Para X Radio, our hosts feel the plight of these evicted disembodied, and we're reaching out to you to please open your heart to one of these lost souls, such as the ghost soldier of the General Wayne Inn or the abandoned spirit cat of Benjamin Rush. So please, please, let a little spooky into your life. Won't you open your house to a ghost without a home?
Para X.
Vicky just killed a poor little ant.
I'll kill them all.
Poor baby. Oh, he didn't do anything to you. Okay, hi, everybody. Welcome back to Exploring the Paranormal with Keeks Paranormal. I'm Shauna.
And this is Vicky the
and
Ant.
And we have Anita Tubble. Yay!
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Anita. We're so glad you're here. And you were telling us about the
three exorcisms.
I'm so excited to hear about it.
Yes.
Well, the first one, I really never had been involved in anything quite like it. And I have lupus and fibromyalgia, so if I have a really bad day, the only thing that will really help me is laying in a tanning bed. The heat is just, it does wonders. But I had joined in Midwest City, signed up for a little tanning salon. And anyway, I walked in, and this lady was writing something on the counter, and she broke the pencil lead looking at me and growled at me and walked off.
Whoa.
Her father is standing next to her, and he looks at me, and well, I start to leave, and he comes out, he goes, no, please, please don't leave. I'm like, your daughter has a demonic presence with her. He goes, how do you know that? I was trying to explain to him, you know, hey, I'm gifted and I can pick up on things. And he just breaks down and starts crying. He says, can you help her? He goes, I know that she used to do witchcraft and she's done spells and she's this
and
that.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know how to help her. Well, I tried to talk to the girl and she totally blew me off. Well, I left, and at the time I have Linda Hillard, she's just funny as heck. She lives in Lawton. She used to be on my team. She's like 4'11". She was on my team then. I went back into the salon and the girl was still there and she started crying and she said, can you help me? And I said, yes. And I started to explain to her what I could do to help her. And I said, but I know that you've done this, this, this. And she said, how do you know? And I said, because I can read it all over you. Well,
wow.
We had made plans to meet at her house. And anyway, I had Linda with me and a lady named LaDonna Heflin from Lawton. And Linda's, she's Catholic. And I told her, I said, please bring your holy water because we're probably going to need it as a joke. Well, whenever we got there, this lady took off running. She growled at us, and she took off running, so I jumped the fence because her husband's like, she's going to go into the traffic. Whenever I jumped the fence, she immediately stopped in her tracks, and she turned around, and she come at me, and she hit me like a football tackle. She knocked me on my butt. That's how hard she hit me.
Oh,
and she
my
started
God.
Running. So me and Linda actually got her down, and we started performing a little exorcism, which I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Honestly, nothing. I was just praying over this girl. She started having a foul stench come from her. She was clawing us. She was fighting us. She was gurgling. She started talking Latin, which Linda spoke Latin, so she could interpret a lot of it. But to make a long story short, we prayed for her and over her for almost an hour. Finally, she just went limp. And whenever she went limp, it smelt like a whole bunch of flowers in the room.
Oh.
And she had a big Great Dane. Soon as she went limp, that dog jumps up, he looks at me and Linda, and he starts growling. Now this dog, we've been petting him all night, you know, when we was there trying to talk to her. He was friendly. That spirit had went into him.
Linda took holy water and doused him with it. He ran screaming out the back door, went into the backyard, and like, I don't know if you would call having a convulsion or what, on the ground. And all of a sudden it was over. He was up. He was walking sort of sunny, and he walked back to us. Well, being me, you know, that wasn't really an exorcism on her. I was just fighting something that I knew that I had to get out of her. But I didn't close the circle with her.
Oh, no.
So about 4 months later, she got hit again with it. And we went back, and she just refused to let us into the house. She refused to let us to talk to her any deep than what we had done before. She didn't want us there. And she politely told us to leave after she invited us back. So we left, and I had contacted her sister and her dad, and I said, I'm so sorry, you know. And they're like, well, she was doing so good until she did a binding spell on her ex-husband. And I couldn't help her anymore. But we were working with the chaplain, the pastor at Fort Sill, on the Catholic Church down there. You know, Vatican will only let you have so many cases in the United States for the priest to go to. And
really?
I didn't know that.
Yes, there's only six priests in the United States that are actually ordained to do the exorcisms.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
So what we did, we went with Father Gary.
Is he the one that was on Ghost Adventures?
I'm not sure if he was or not. The Father Gary, he was at Fort Sill. What happened there, there was a lady that lived on the base, and she was possessed. I mean, the things that happened.
Oh,
Linda Hillard, James Middleton, myself, and Father Gary was there. And the things that happened there, we started praying over her. She was hissing, making noises. There was a Cheez-It cracker box on an end table. There's no air blowing, nothing. And this thing stands up on its edge and starts spinning and spinning and spinning. Well, Father Gary says, if you don't have faith, leave the room. You know, go outside. Well, we all stayed, and he did what he had to do. And it was probably about 2 hours, 3 hours. Well, whenever we left the next day, Linda wound up with pneumonia and bronchitis. Me and James both had many heart attacks. And Father Gary was 42. He was an avid runner. He fell and broke his hip and had to have total hip replacement.
For a year,
all of us had hell. And whenever I say hell, I'm talking about there's three things that demonic spirits will attack. Number one is they will attack all your relationships, trying to tear you apart, just destroy them. Second thing they attack is finances. They totally break your finances. And then the third thing that they do is, you know, they want to ruin you financially, or I'm sorry, health-wise. They'll take your health. Well, that's what happened to us. There's four of us, and that's what happened. And for like a year and a half, 2 years, it took us forever. I had to go through sweat after sweat, my way, Indian way, to get this off of me. James, I know he went and he got blessed, I don't know how many times, and I know Linda did, but this was just, it was horrible. It was the most horrible experience I've ever had.
I bet.
The third one I went to was a child.
Oh, God.
And it's hard being a mom and being a grandma. And you see a child that, you know, being a private investigator, I always look and I check out, make sure that there's no mental illnesses in the family. No one's taking any type of psychotic pills or anything, you know, because you have to rule that out. You
right.
have to look and see if there's any schizophrenia in the family. You have to rule that out, too. And that's just being, you know, there's some red tape that you have to follow. And that's some of it. So that's what we did, but this little boy, he would start crying like a child would cry, and then the next breath out of him was ungodly, a voice just gurgly and growly. And it's like, how can he be making that noise? You know, and it was hard dealing with that. And it was a long time, probably about 4 hours that we were in there with him. And I can't talk about some of the stuff that happened in these, you know, because we were all sworn to oath that we wouldn't say this and that, but it makes you stop and think, you know, you just experienced something that nobody else in a lifetime probably that you know is ever going to experience this,
right.
You know, how do you deal with that? How, you know, a child that's doing this, and I mean, he would say things that at his age, he shouldn't have even known about.
Right.
You know, and people that's possessed, they'll say things to get your attention about your family, about you, you know, and you have to be really strong not to buy into that. And it really took a lot of energy for me because, you know, being a mama hen, you're wanting to smother that child, you're wanting to protect him, but you know that that's not him there, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a difficult situation, and I've been asked to sit through a few more, but I refuse to do it. It's so, people that are gifted, it is so draining that it takes months for you to get back to where you need to be.
Oh my God.
I can imagine, and because I'm sensing something normal, not demonic, but just normal. Sometimes it takes a while to come back from it, so I can't imagine.
Oh gosh, let me tell you.
Trying to come back from.
Especially when she's gotten connected to somebody who's got a bad attitude that day.
Well, you know, and it's really funny because people, I've seen a lot of things in my life. I've witnessed a lot of things that normal people would probably say, man, you are crazy as hell. You didn't see that, or that didn't happen. But, you know, I don't have to clarify myself or justify myself to anybody because I know who I am. I know what I'm about. I don't have to prove myself to anyone.
Exactly.
You know, I've already been to that point. My friends that know me know who I am and what I'm about.
That's what matters.
And I don't have to prove myself to anybody.
Yep.
And I'm comfortable in my own skin where, you know, if I tell you something, do it, because I'm telling you that to help you. And that's what a lot of people, you know, I hate whenever somebody will send me a picture and they're like, do a reading for me. And right, I can tell right whenever you send me the picture, hey, you're trying to mess with me. This is nobody that you know. This is an off-the-wall picture that you just got because you're trying to test my gifts. And Adrian Scaff, he is I met him and Tina. I actually trained them and their team, and he's a very bad skeptic.
Yes,
and
he is.
When
yes.
I met him, he did not believe anything that I said. Well, I told him some things about a case that he asked me about, and it was things that the people had not even confided in him, and he went and asked him there. They said, yes, that happened. Well, then I made him a believer in me. And it makes me feel really good because he is such a skeptic. Whenever he has issues or something, he calls me and he'll say, what do you think? Or can you tell me about this case or whatnot and blah, blah. Well, you know, another danger of paranormal is you can be the most boldest, seasoned investigator, but you can let your guard down just a little bit and you can have an attachment.
Yep.
And Adrian had an attachment. He had a very bad attachment. And whenever it happened to him, I called Tina and I told her, I said, I picked something up. Adrian's got something with him really bad. And she's like, yeah, he's not Adrian. I'm like, you need to get him and get him into, go see your pastor or somebody, get him prayed for, get him blessed. You know, he's got a bad attachment. This thing was with him for almost a year. It almost destroyed him.
Oh, gosh.
Before he got rid of it. And that's one thing I want to tell everybody, you know,
it's all good. I don't like thrill seekers. I like the people that go out and try to prove that there is, you know, paranormal out there. It's real.
Exactly.
Yes.
Help others in need. That's why I started my team, was to help others, because I went through hell growing up. And if I can help one person, you know, overcome a bad spirit or get through something, extreme haunting, I want to do that. And that's why I set my goals and my team to do that. And it's really, you have a lot of teams out there that's just getting started, and they're thrill seekers, and they need to know that this is not a game. It is not a joke. There's dangers in the paranormal, and always protect yourself. I don't care if you're a witch. I don't care if you're a Christian. I don't care what your beliefs are. Everybody has a different thing to protect themselves. Use it.
Yes, exactly. Definitely.
Use it.
Most definitely.
And what kind of things do you recommend, like from your own experience, to protect themselves against the negative spirits?
Well, I use a medicine bag. And if someone asks me to make them a medicine bag, because I'm a medicine carrier, and what I do is I get to feel their energy. I get in there and I get a hold of their energy. And then each medicine bag is different. It has different articles in it. You know, a lot of sage, cedar, and different other things that is from Mother Earth. A lot of people use crystals, which is good. Anything that comes from Mother Earth is a good, positive protection against bad, evil energies and spirits. I'm really hip on, you know, if they're Christian, crosses, holy water, anything that's been blessed. But my main thing is cedar and tobacco and sage. If you bless that, which a lot of stuff that I have went through Sundance ceremony, and it's been blessed and blessed and blessed. And I also have holy water that I use. I have some stuff that was sent to me from my friend in California. You know, she's a witch, but I'll use that if need be. Not everything. It depends on which case you're doing, because some cases are different than others. You know, you might have a demonic spirit, which you might have to intensify and use some crystals on it, use some, you know, sage and cedar. You know, that's purification. They don't like that. They don't. It's like frankincense in the Bible. They don't like anything that's purification.
Right.
And I'll tell you the way, a lot of people don't know this, the Indian way. If you're cleansing the house and you start burning that sage, and most of the time just use white sage, if that smoke turns black, you've got a demonic presence with you. Most of the time it will burn gray, but whenever it starts burning black, you've got a demonic presence.
Wow, I
did not know that. So you said white sage, huh?
If you use sage, usually it has a gray smoke, but if it has a black smoke,
yes,
it burns.
Yes, and it will be black. I mean, it will be just as black can be, and that's demonic.
Oh my gosh!
Wow, that's a good tip
for
us. That's
really scary.
Now, what tribe are you from?
Kickapoo.
That's a new tribe. I really haven't heard of that tribe. Are you guys like really rare?
Kickapoo's from, no, they're all over Oklahoma. They're the reservations out of Horton, Kansas.
Oh, okay.
My Indian name's Negusakoi, which means star woman, one who sees.
Oh, I love that.
I do too. I'm from Southern Alabama, so I know a lot about the Cherokee and the Choctaw.
Well, I'm either part Cherokee or part Chippewa.
I'm Choctaw.
There's been a family debate on which part I am.
For years, I thought I was Cherokee, but Mom said, "No, honey, you're Choctaw." I'm like, "Oh, okay."
Well, we were always taught when you cleanse a home, you start in the east, and that is because the sun rises in the east, and that's new beginning.
Wow!
So you start in the east, and you go all the way around the house, and you end where you start. And then you go outside, and what's left of your sage, if it's a bad haunting, you have to bury that by a tree that faces the east.
and that's giving life to that tree to protect the house also. Wow. I mean, that's Indian ways. There, a lot of tribes believe differently, but, you know, being brought up, you know, and learning, it was, like I said, if I didn't have my grandmother and my grandpa, there's things that I probably wouldn't have known either.
Right.
But well, it's...
We're going to have to get with you another date.
Yeah, we're going to have you back on here, honey.
Because we're almost out of time, well, and we've got like a gazillion things more to ask.
Yeah, we're like, well, there's so much we want to ask her.
Well, you guys, anytime you need advice on something, Vicky's got my number. Just give me a call.
Oh, we're still up for going on an investigation with you, right?
Right, yeah, and we're still good for the investigation because we're getting ready to...
Oh, yeah, I'm about to fill out that application,
get that
honey.
Application going, so... And we definitely want you along.
We definitely need that. We, it's really, you know, to me, I love what I do. You know, and I take it a lot of times whenever... And you guys know this, too. Anybody who's a seasoned investigator, you're not going to go into a house all the time and get evidence.
No.
Exactly.
You might go on six, seven, maybe even 10 investigations and not have anything. No EVPs, no pictures, nothing. And then you might have that one that's a holy grail that you got, and you're like, oh my gosh, look what we have. We have this, we got that. You know, and that just amuses me and amazes me because I, you know, I love to see people's faces whenever they do get that first EVP or they do have that first contact with the spirit or something happens to him. Like my husband, the first, he's a big man. He's 6'8", 300 plus pounds. Take him on an investigation. And I mean, he's old biker type. He don't, you know, that scares him. He's not afraid of nothing. He's sitting upstairs against a wall in a chair and he gets scratched straight down his neck and his back, three scratches.
Oh my goodness.
And it made a believer out of him. But what's so awesome, this house that we did, a few years later, I was working with a lady, and she found out that I was a ghost hunter, and she starts talking about this haunted house that she lived in and how her son had all this bad experience in there. And I'm like, that sounds like a house that we did on so-and-so. And she's like, what? Where at? And I told her, she goes, oh my God, that was my house.
Oh.
And so we started comparing notes, and the stuff that happened to her son happened to every person. There was like four owners, and every person that lived there had this experience.
Wow.
Well, my husband was one of them that had the experience, and it was a really wicked place to go to. But just seeing the look on his face, like, I don't know what happened, but my neck is burning, and I looked, I'm like, oh my God. And you know that people, you can't scratch yourself perfect straight. And this was three scratches, almost halfway down his back and his neck. And there's no way he could have done it himself.
No. Oh, wow.
Right. Well, yeah. It's funny that you mentioned that about evidence, because I swear, if we had 100 pieces of evidence, every single time we got a piece of evidence, we act like we're a new kid at a candy store. We're like, oh, that was so exciting.
I actually had my first scratch during an investigation
last year. As it was happening, because it was literally happening in front of us. And we were like, filming it.
And I was like, okay, you need to come scratch me if you're here.
And it did.
I was provoking. I have a bad habit of provoking. It's horrible.
Well, yeah, this one was...
What you wish for.
I know, right?
We don't provoke unless, you know, we know... Well, this particular one we knew was attacking the children that was in the
house.
And
we wanted to provoke it to bring it out so we could try to get rid of it.
Yeah, so... But yeah, we were literally filming it as it was scratching her. And it was three scratches too, wasn't it? If I recall right.
I don't remember.
We'll
have to take a look at it.
Mock of the Trinity, demonic. And, you know, that is amazing because, and you know yourself, you're going to have all these skeptics out there. It doesn't matter if you have a perfect picture of an entity or a light anomaly or, you know, I'm not real big on orbs, but there's some of them that you cannot say that it's dust or you know, anything else, if there's something with it. But it doesn't matter because these people's going to nitpick it and blow it off. We had a perfect picture of a woman's face taken at Sooner Corral. in Moore, Oklahoma. And we let one of our team members look at it, which was a very bad skeptic, and all of a sudden it got deleted off the camera. But it was a perfect picture, and what happened was one of the ladies of the night, back whenever it happened, you know, she was killed there.
And oh, my goodness.
It looked like the picture that we had on the camera, like the one, the old picture they had of her. And, you know, but we didn't have it now to compare because he deleted it.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh, Anita.
A lot of times I used to tell people, don't mess with anything.
No.
Let me look at this, or let me listen to it. I had another gentleman that was on my team forever, and he would never get any EVPs. And the reason why he wasn't getting EVPs, because he was blowing them all off. And he has some Class A EVPs, and I'm like, Chris, you got some EVPs on here that is like mind, you know, blowing. Why are you not telling me about it? I don't hear anything. I'm like, oh my gosh, just let me listen to it before you delete anything.
Oh my gosh. Well, honey, you're going to have to come back and tell us these stories, because we have to go.
At the end of our time, before we want, we'd love to have you back.
With you guys.
Thank you.
Could you hold the line, honey?
Yeah, hold on for just a moment. We'll be right with you. We're just going to close up, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
It's been fun exploring the paranormal with you.
Stay tuned next week on
Exploring the Paranormal with Geeks Paranormal.
The aliens are coming in.
We are now being taken over by aliens.